We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
We are back in the second hour of Lunchtime with Len. Glad to have you with me. Hope you have a day off today, and that makes me extra glad that you are spending it with us. If you are at work today, it's okay, so am I. We are spending this day, however, looking at the life, the legacy, the impact of Martin Luther King, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. And I am glad that Dr. Todd Allen brought that to, you know, brought out the fact that we often refer to him as Dr. Martin Luther King, and we don't always include that Reverend, because that was a big part of who he was. My next guest, Jeff Ballou, a native Pittsburgher, who has made his mark well beyond Pittsburgh. Currently, he's with Air Americas at Al Jazeera Media. He has served as a past president of the National Press Club. He has, boy, if there is something in journalism, he's probably done it. He's probably been recognized for it. He's in town today because he spoke to students at his alma mater, Penn State, out at McKeesport campus today for Martin Luther King Day. And I saw he was coming in town and figured we'd snag him. He actually was on this show a couple months ago. He joined us by phone, but he is here in the studio today. Glad to have you here.
Thanks for having me back, Lynn.
And I want to jump right in because you spoke to students at Penn State today.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that we kind of talked about earlier is there were so many things. Sadly, most of America, you say the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, and they think about the I Have a Dream speech. And there were so many other things that Dr. King did and spoke about and brought to the attention of this country that somehow or another kind of get lost sometimes.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the things I focused on when I spoke to Penn State today is that you can't freeze him in 1963. You can't freeze him on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial. This is a man who lived an incredible arc in terms of his growth, spiritually, you know, philosophically, and so forth. And as he did that, he used several weapons, and I say that nicely. One of them was students. And in fact, it was the televised assault of students by German shepherds and fire hoses that arrested the attention of the world to focus how bad the racial problem was in the United States in the 1950s and 1960s. And I wanted to remind the students that they have tremendous power.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I told him that every line counts. I told him that Dr. King, towards the end of his life, was deeply unpopular because he decided to take on two big issues that people said he had no business tackling. One was poverty in the Poor People's Campaign. The other was being anti-war. Even though there was a robust anti-war movement, they said he was nice in the nice little box of tackling, you know, segregated fountains and buses and movie theaters and whatnot. But when he jumped into the arena and said the Vietnam War was wrong, that it was immoral, and that African Americans and other people of color who were dying disproportionately in that war had no business fighting somebody else of color, that's when President Lyndon Baines Johnson turned his back on him. That's mm-hmm. when the NAACP and the other, you know, cadence of civil rights organizations turned their back on him. The black press excoriated him. The white press excoriated him. Everybody said, no, stop it. You have no business talking about this stuff. Stick to where you were. And that was, you know, annoying enough as it is with some folks, but now he had the establishment against him. He was no longer the darling of the press. He was no longer the darling of the organizations that he fought alongside with. And that's something that people have to understand that he was that he was becoming increasingly radical as he headed towards the end of his life, and that was it. When it was that hate, it was that resentment, that racism. I'm sure that led in part to his assassination.
And yet, people don't talk about that. Talk about that period of his life.
No, they don't. He was talking about, hey, he wanted a guaranteed national income. He wanted access to K through 12 education and higher education. He decried the income inequality, not just between blacks and whites, but between poor people and rich people. And when you look at it today, you know, you have indices that point out that the wealth disparity, the wealth gap, has been the largest it's been in 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of the same things are still out there: a lack of access, too much hunger in K through 12 and higher education, and a lack of civility, a lack of community, a lack of wanting to move the society forward. And now we have a generation of students now who need to be charged with the responsibility. Well, first they need the opportunity to even get to college, and worry about books, and not worrying about whether or not they can have three square meals in K through 12 or college, let alone thriving in college, learning how to be civil in college, and learning how to go out and be change agents in whatever their field and endeavor is. And that's what I was trying to tell students today. That's what Dr. King was trying to do. He was trying to inspire change agents to go out and make the world better.
52 years ago. We'll pick it up right there. It's 13 minutes after 1 o'clock. You're listening to KDKA. I'm glad you're here. We are back. It's the second hour of Lunchtime with Lynn. Let me just do a little bit of housekeeping before we get back to our guests. Hey, by the way, if you know of any ordinary individuals doing extraordinary things in or around the city of Pittsburgh, now's the time to nominate them for Larry Richards Hometown Heroes. You can go to kdkaradio.com. And you can get more information about it right there. Also want to just mention congratulations to the folks out at Holy Cross Episcopal Church. They had the gun buyback program today. Apparently so many people took their guns to get a buyback on it. They sold out. They ran out of money in the first hour. I don't know if that's just a reflection of how many guns there were out there, but hopefully they will get some more money and they can buy back more of your guns. Jeff Ballou is my guest. He's here in the studio. Jeff Ballou, America's at Al Jazeera Media. And Jeff, I want to go back. I mentioned that you were in town speaking to students at Penn State. And I think for a lot of people, when we talk about students and Martin Luther King Jr., the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., a lot of folks don't make a correlation there. Students, young people, and Dr. King, when in fact, much of his interest concern was students and young people.
Yeah, and you have to remember, when he was assassinated, he wasn't even 40 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the people that came into prominence were students. For example, one of the highest profile incidents of trying to demonstrate just how bad racism was in the Deep South was watching a very young college student named John Lewis try to help lead a march across the Edmund Pettus Bridge.
Mm.
And watching, we all have seen the footage by now, and it's very easy to Google if you haven't seen it, Bloody Sunday, 1965, which was portrayed in the movie about Dr. King made by Ava DuVernay, and seeing people being beaten within an inch of their life because the Alabama State Troopers said, no, no, no. And that was happening at lunch counters. That was happening at polling places. Students at every single part of the various fronts of civil rights were the change agents. And that's what I was trying to tell the students. It's like, if they can do that, most certainly you can make, you know, study, do well, and go out and change some of the things that are challenging us as a society. That's what's important. And that's some of the things I was involved with as a college student trying to help improve the racial climate at Penn State have survived 30 years later and being involved as an alumnus. And that's why one of the things I mentioned to the students today is that I'm not done serving yet. And the fact that I'm now trying to earn a nomination to run for the Board of Trustees, because you have to be, Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. believed in having a seat at the table, mm-hmm. and making sure that our voices, our views are represented, so we get the benefits of being at the table of brotherhood. That's what's really important here, so that when you're talking about closing economic inequality gaps, when you're talking about trying to make a Penn State tuition affordable or any tuition affordable, when you're trying to tackle all of the things that are necessary to build a better community, to build more civility, to build better partnerships, not just within alums, but between schools and the towns they live in, that they reside in, you have to have people who care about those issues and will carry those issues forward. And I'm hoping the students will do it. And if I'm lucky enough to be nominated and elected, I'll do that on behalf of my alma mater.
Now, you say something, and I got into an interesting conversation with a young man the other day who said to me, "We're tired of fighting for a seat at the table. We just want to have our own table. And we're tired of fighting for a seat at the table." And my comeback to him was, I think there's room for both.
Yes.
I think it's interesting for you to have your own table, but that's not for everyone. I think that both tables are significant. What say you?
I say yes, you can do both, because one of the things you learn how to do in college is learn how to set up your own. You can learn how to set up your own business. You can learn how to create your own venture. The universities are supposed to be laboratories to solve society's problems and tackle society's challenges. And one of those things is to build, if you want to build a business, to do something that helps with the economy, that helps with furthering the field down in medicine, helps with so many agriculture, you name it. That empowers you, and education empowers you to do your own thing. But you can also be at the seat of the table, so you can make sure that those programs, those business incubators, those things are available to students, are available to the community, to make sure that when you're trying to get that money to start your own business, there's somebody at that other table that's helping to cut that check.
I want to talk to you about the media. And I'm trying to figure out my time here. You know what? I'm going to save that only because we're going to have to break away for traffic in just a second. But when I think about, again, everybody has this vision of Dr. King in front of the reflecting pool. Everybody has this vision of Dr. King on that balcony in Texas. And everybody, I mean, Texas, Memphis, everybody pointing to where the bullet came from. Television news coverage was, in a lot of ways, at its infancy.
Yeah, it was defined by Dr. King.
By Dr. King. So now we see the role that media is playing in 2020 is a lot different. I want to talk about that. We're going to do that in just a minute. Right now, we are. I got so much I want to talk with my guest, Jeff, about. We got 2 minutes before news, so we'll start the conversation because the realities are the media today is a much different media than Dr. King knew in the late 60s.
Yeah, and before news, I just want to revisit one quick point, and that is television news was pretty much defined in many ways by the modern civil rights era, and Dr. King was a master of using it. And I talked about how he used students. He was invited on Meet the Press. He was invited on all these other places, and he knew how to talk about the movement using a growing medium in television news. And it'll be interesting to talk about on the other side of news how that may have changed or not changed in 2020.
Indeed. And of course, social media wasn't around at all. And I, you know, and it's almost even unfair for me to say that because sometimes I say to folks, social media is not news and we need to keep those separate, but we'll see if we have time to do it. We got so much to do and you got a plane to catch. We are coming up. We're approaching 1:30. We'll take a break for news. We'll come back with Jeff Ballou in just a minute. So stick around. It is Lunchtime with Lynn. You're listening to KDKA right now. It's time for the news. We are back here on Lunchtime with Lynn. I have so much to talk about with my guest, Jeff Ballou. He's in town. He's got a plane to catch. So I'm just going to dive right back in. This media thing, this media component that we've been talking about. So Dr. King knew how to use the media, but now the media is different. The media is different.
It is dramatically different. It has grown up and it is diversified. It's a great use of the First Amendment, but the First Amendment can be a double-edged sword. As we now know, social media is one of the greatest connectors we've ever experienced. It's caused revolutions in Egypt and Tunisia, but it's also caused some of the greatest divisiveness we've seen in modern human history. So what we have seen, people have used it for good and used it for bad. And I tell you, you have to tip your hat. I talked about before the break how Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King was a wonderful manipulator of the press. So is the President of the United States. To be fair, if he's anything else, he has studied it. He knows how to use it. He knows how to press the buttons, and not just within the press, but within social media, which does not observe the rules of journalism. It's a wild, wild west, and he's carved his way, and it works very well for him, and you have to respect that.
It does, and he understands it better than most. And while some people get upset about that, I think you're right. You have to respect. You have to respect the game. I'll say
right.
That
I as someone who has represented the press as president of the National Press Club, I took particular umbrage to the fact of how he attacked me and my colleagues. But I'm talking about the tacticians. I'm not talking about intent, and I'm not talking about how it lands. So yes, we have a great opportunity to take these great tools that have grown and expanded and use them to advance society and hopefully not destroy it.
So we've talked about a lot in this 40 minutes or so. You're getting ready. How do we tie this all up in a nice bow?
I think the nice bow is three things. One, students. Students have a great impact on history, and they can have a great impact on future. Two, access. Economic inequality is one of the greatest issues of our time. We have to tackle it just like we tackle anything else, war, disease. We have to go out and tackle that. And lastly, we have to make sure that just because we have the greatest instruments available to us, that doesn't mean we have to use them every single time, and we have to use them wisely.
So when you look at where we are in 2020 and you look at Dr. King in 1968, he was only 39 years old, 52 years ago. What do you think he would think about where we are 52 years later?
Oh, that's a dangerous thing. I don't like going down that road because people hate when people do that. But I think Dr. King laid it out in his writings and speeches. And essentially, he said this. The problems of the have and have-nots are still one of the greatest threats to our society. The problem of civility is a great problem to our society. The problem of race still plagues our society. And we are duty-bound if we want a civilization that will not perish as fools, together as fools, we need to fix all of those things for the beloved community.
Did you take questions when you were at the Penn State campus today?
I did not.
You did not. when you looked out into the eyes of the students, what did you see?
I saw they were paying attention. I hope they listened. Some of them came up to me afterwards and said that was very nice what you had to say. But, it's like anything. It's the tail of the tape. But you have to figure out what they're going to do going forward. I'll be watching carefully And as I said earlier, as I continue to visit Penn State campuses for my trustee race and point people to learning about me and learning about how I want to lead, I'm going to keep paying attention to these students and seeing how they're going to fix what we've broken.
And just for our listeners, because we talk a lot about Penn State on this very show, how does that work, a trustee race? So is it like it's running for office to become a trustee?
It is very much like running for office. So when somebody goes to my website, everylinecounts.vote, they can see why I'm running. They can see what I've done for Penn State. Of the 30-odd seats on the trustee board, 9 are directly elected by alumni. 3 come up for election every year. And I hope to have the support of all 679,000 of my fellow alums worldwide to win the day, get on the ballot, and win a seat so I can advocate for what Dr. King asked for: better access, more civility, and a greater community that can work well to improve our society and improve our university.
All right, there you heard it, alums. And if you guys, I'm not an alum, so I don't get to vote, but if you all get him elected, maybe then we'll have a hotline to a trustee at Penn State. Right here on the show. I promise to get you out of here in time to catch your flight. Jeff Ballou, thanks so much for joining us once again. Always a pleasure, always good stuff. And we'll let you go so you can get to the airport. We appreciate you indeed.
Thank you for the invitation, Lynn. I'm always happy to come back.
Thank you so much. And okay. We'll let you go. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And you'll get to the airport in time. I said the last thing I wanted was that hanging over my head that he missed his flight because of my delay. So I got you out of here. Actually, 2 minutes ahead. 90 seconds. 90 seconds ahead of when I would. You guys remember the way out? All right. Thank you. Thank you. Safe travels. Look at him all in blue and white, too. Okay. Yeah. All you Penn State folks. Yeah. You'll appreciate blue suit. Blue tie, white shirt, blue and white Penn State scarf, the whole nine yards. Yeah, you know, I was out of that loop altogether. I went to Duquesne, so, you know, that Penn State pit rivalry, yep, I never had anything to do with that. But we appreciate Jeff Ballou stopping by. And as I said, 3 hours today, really. And I can, you know, do it under the umbrella of looking at Martin Luther King Jr., the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., but it's also looking at civil rights, past, present, and the future. There's so much more to the story that is the Reverend Dr. King, and that's what I hope to cover today. I think it's important. This is way more than just a day off from school, a day off from work. It is the legacy. It is the man. It is how he changed our lives and how he raised the bar for all of us. And sometimes I think we lose sight of that. We'll continue this retrospective on the late Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King as we celebrate this day.